Yeah, baby, she's walking right out the door. It's The Doors, Love Her Madly. You got to lock to Black Sky Radio and The Ross Owen Show with your host, Ross Owen.
Hey, everybody. Glad you're still with us. We have our very special guest on the line this week. So for all you Outlander fans out there, you're in for a treat right now. Because my special guest this week is Andrew Gower, who played the role of Prince Charles Stewart, and he's on the line right. Hello, and we're live. Hello, how you doing, Andrew?
I'm very good, thanks, Ross. How are you, mate?
I'm doing good. I was just explaining the origin of the word Bonnie, as in Bonnie Prince Charlie, to Nightmare, who's also with us on the air today.
How did you get about explaining it to him?
I knew what it meant. I just didn't know the origins of it and how it became a thing.
Yeah, and I didn't either. That's why I googled it and read it out, but it made it sound like it was that I knew exactly what I was talking about.
Well, I did exactly the same when I got the part. I had to google it, so I mean, we've all been there.
Did you really?
Yeah. I mean specifically understanding why the Scots referred to him as Bonnie Prince Charlie was, yeah, I had to go about. I mean, I didn't know anything about him, so it was all everything. I mean, everything as far as him growing up in Italy was a shock to me. Everything to do with the Jacobites, I was a total novice.
Well, let's go back to the very beginning. Tell us how you actually got the role as Bonnie Prince Charlie in Outlander. Where did it all begin?
It all began with an email. It all began with an email, as every role does, and they were like, "Do you want to come and meet for this?" So I went into the lovely Suzanne Smith's office, and it was the first scene that the first time you actually see me in the brothel. It was the brothel scene, and I went in with Suzanne, and you know, you have that nice feeling of it's gone well, and then I got a call back, and then I was back in with our first block director, Metin Hussein, I remember Metin had a toothache, and he was sat in the back of the room, and I still, you know, just about managed to make him laugh, and at the end of it, I kind of had that good feeling about it, and then I think in the September time, I was on set, so it was all a very, looking back, it was very. As kind of audition processes go, it was a nice audition process, but it was, you know, I think they kind of were, I think the whole kind of character of Bonnie Prince Charlie and where he originates from and how Diana, you know, perceives him in the book and portrays him in the book. It was a lot to audition with, so there was a lot to do and a lot to deliver in the one scene, and I was it was a hell of a scene. It was, you know, about 9-10 pages, so but fond memories, looking back, really fond memories of going in, and I knew as soon as I read as I read that particular scene, he was going to be a hell of a character to play.
Sure. Now We do have fans listening from all over the world right now, and we actually have one on the phone right now. We have Julie from Texas. Are you there, Julie? Are you with us?
I am. Can you hear me?
Fantastic. You're coming through loud and clear. Fantastic. Now, you have a question for Andrew.
I do. I know that Diana researches the books meticulously, and so I wondered, when you were going to get this part, if you researched for the part, and I also know that Prince Charlie is an iconic character in Scotland, you know, almost mythic. And did your opinion of him change after you played the part?
Oh, great question.
That's a good question. Yeah. So as I said earlier, because I didn't grow up in Scotland. I grew up in Liverpool, and we didn't. I mean, he's not on the syllabus, Scottish history, unfortunately. And I don't, you know, it's a shame because it's so fascinating. It was not on my school syllabus. I was all Gladstone, Disraeli, and British history, which actually isn't as isn't as fun as the Scottish history. I think the Scottish history is fascinating and kind of constantly fighting against the British is something that I had no idea about. So that himself, the Bonnie Prince, everything for me when I landed the part, which you're always, when you land a part and the character actually walked on this earth and the source material. For instance, I used the Frank McLean biography, which became my Bible for the Prince. So when the character you're playing has actually existed and people have researched him and are experts on the Bonnie Prince, I'm in a lucky situation as an actor to have that material to draw on, and then also to be able to take that material and mix it with Diana's books, which really paint a great picture of the Prince. And then the scripts as well. The scripts are, you know, Ira Burr's script in episode 2 and the ones afterwards, all of them kind of give you, in the end, you leave your research alone and you focus on the scripts and you fuel the scripts with everything that you've researched. It was a combination of a lot of research to begin with, and then in the end, just trusting the scripts and kind of trying to, fuel all the scripts with what I'd researched.
Wow, does that answer your question, Julie?
Well, thank you so much, and I do want to say I love your acting. I watched you in the Murdoch Mysteries playing Sherlock Holmes, and I was thinking, I was thinking at the time that it just crossed my mind that when you have really talented and creative actors that bring these characters to life like that, it is just it's just such a wonderful feeling to be able to watch this. And so thank you so much for sharing your talent with us.
Well, thank you for your kind words. That means a lot. And have a lovely day over in Texas.
Yes, thank you, and my wishes for your continued success, sir.
Cheers.
What are you doing today in Texas, Julie?
Well, I'm working on a Civil War novel about a lady who's she's a spy. So that's what I do every day.
Oh, fascinating! Right. Brilliant. Well, you keep up the good work.
Best of luck.
Yeah,
thank
best,
you.
Best of luck. Thanks for taking the time to call us today, Julie. Okay, that was Julie Weathers over in Texas. Thanks to Julie for calling in. We've got more callers lined up very shortly.
Hey, Ross, I don't want to interrupt you, but I got a question for Andrew.
Yeah, go ahead, Nightmare.
Oh,
I want to know which was itchier, Sherlock's hat or Bonnie Prince Charlie's wig?
Definitely the wig, 100% the wig, yeah. That's an easy answer, but good question.
I hope I'm not taking anybody else's question, because I had one more. Is it hard, obviously you have actor talents out the wazoo, but you're obviously not a very effeminate man in real life, and the dandies back in the day that were the royalty, they were kind of,
camp.
They were fancy.
Camp.
Camp, yes, camp. That's a great
flamboyant
word. Yes, yeah. Flamboyant. Do you find it? I guess I would look at it as one of two directions: either it's a release and it's fun to play, or it's a drag and horrible to play.
Definitely the liberating. It's kind of a dream, isn't it? An actor's dream, sort of. To play somebody who's larger than life, because I think in a day to day, he's like a peacock. I always described him as a peacock, and me and myself and Terry and Ron, when we were, when I was having fittings for the costume, every time I tried a new outfit on, it was though he was peacocking, and I think I became larger even in the outfits. Terry's outfits just made me like bigger. So in a sense, because in data, a lot of actors I meet, my favorite actors, you wouldn't recognize them on the street, and you certainly wouldn't recognize them as any of their roles that they play. You'll just see them in the corner with a half pint of Guinness and, you know, and a timid little voice. And I think that's the beauty of what we do, is that we get the opportunity to play people who don't take no for an answer, whereas I always take no for an answer. it's always a pleasure to play, to be in the skin of somebody a lot, you know, bolder than yourself.
Well, you do a fantastic job, and it was brilliant. Loved watching your work.
Now, one of the things I would get lynched if I didn't mention it is a catchphrase, which we don't like to call a catchphrase, but mark me. Do you know what? Everybody says, please get him to say mark me, please get him to say, and I don't want to put you in the spot, but...
We can't, that's like something that David Brent would do, isn't it, where he's asked to, or Alan Partridge is asked to say, no, you know, aha. In all honesty as well, with the Bonnie Prince's voice, because I haven't watched an episode or watched any of the videos, for a while, a good while now. That kind of high pitched tone I kind of set him at has kind of left my head a little bit, so it'll probably just be a really disappointing mark me, like me just saying it now, which would disappoint people. But yeah, it's a funny, crazy kind of crazy thing that kind of happened with the part, that it has become a bit of a catchphrase.
How did it come about? Was it written into the script, or was it something you put in there, or
it was in an Ira Burr script. Originally it was in the first scene. I think he said it once, and then I think when it was in the script, I just liked it, I don't know, with every character I play, sometimes there's not always a line that you go to. It might not be a line, it might be something physically, but with the Prince it just felt like that line kind of just made me feel like I was constantly trying to prove myself, and that was the thing that I used to do. And also, because I had military aspirations and quite the longing to be on the battlefield, that was also something that, yeah, that bred into the character. And then I think I said it more than we expected. And then in later episodes, I think the writer's room got on board and just, yeah, if anything, I said it probably more than we ever imagined. And then everybody on set started, whilst I was away for a little while, I came back and everybody was saying mark me to each other, so that was a bit bizarre. A bizarre experience.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a drinking game as well now, isn't it?
It is a drinking game. Yeah. I'm responsible for a lot of hangovers.
Do you remember back in the day when Cracker Jack was on, and every time they said Cracker Jack, you would shout Cracker Jack?
Yeah,
it's like every time I mention Andrew Gower's name on Twitter, it's like you say Andrew Gower, everybody says mark me, mark me.
They do, don't they? God, yeah. I mean, there we go. There we have it. I'm done. That's me done for life. It's gonna be on my gravestone.
Oh, absolutely. Now, I want to also ask you about some other stuff as well. While we're on the topic of Outlander, let's talk about some of your co-stars. Stephen Walters, a fellow Liverpudlian. Did you know Stephen before going into Outlander?
I did, yes. We nearly met on a job for the BBC. The Village. We nearly met on that job, but I joined in the second series.
Mm-hmm.
I always seem to join series in the second series. I don't know why that is. They never give it me in the first. That's why. Anyway, I digress. So I joined in the second series, and in the first series, when Stephen was a teacher called, I can't remember his name. Basically, he was my teacher. But it was the younger version of myself, a character called Gilbert Crispin, Ingham, that was his name. Mr. Ingham. He taught my character when he was a boy, and then when I joined in the second series, unfortunately, Stephen didn't come back because I think he was filming Outlander. And so I was very fond of his work from the village, and because I was researching my character as a younger boy, I just happened to be watching Stephen telling my character off, and then lo and behold, about 6 months later, we were on a private jet, not private jet, that sounds posh, posher than it was. It was a chartered plane, but it was just myself, Stephen, and another wonderful actor called Ken Cran, and we were all on this plane together, and myself and Stephen were sat next to each other, and we spoke at the village, and then, as I'm sure a few of you guys have heard, we kind of bonded over being from Liverpool and our love for music, and then, yeah, the rest is history. And then weirdly, not even 6 months later, myself and Stephen, I call him up and I said, "Hey mate, I'm the Bonnie Prince in Outlander," and yeah, and then we got to work together again, which is lovely. So it's been a good few years now I've known Stephen. So yeah, he's a very good friend.
Now you've got a new project coming up with Stephen. Just before we get on to that, tell me who else you bonded with on the Outlander set. Who were you closest to?
Well, I mean, I spent the majority of my time with Mr. Hewen, Sam Hewen. So, yeah, we.
Who does he play?
Who does he play?
Who does he play? Was Sam Hewen?
I don't know actually. I don't know who Sam Hewen plays actually. I don't know. It's just some war warrior of war with a he plays the infamous Jamie, doesn't he? I mean, we'll get in a lot of trouble if we say he's a Sam.
He'll never come on the show if I keep that up.
But he, sorry, Sam. No, we spent a load of time together in every weather, in every studio, and yeah, such a top lad, and
yeah,
professional and very talented chap, and just yeah, really great to spend time with him. But then I spent time with a lot of the French characters, a lot of French actors as well, Stanley Weber's great guy, and just everybody. I mean, Duncan, Tobias, I didn't do any scenes with, but become good friends with him since. So I think everybody in the show, is the beauty of that job is that every single person they cast, I don't know what Suzanne Smith's doing, but she just chooses not only fantastic actors, but also just really great people. And yeah, and I think that, you know, the cast and crew are such a wonderful team to be a part of. So but yeah, I've been lucky that I've made a lot of friends that I would definitely, you know, stay in touch with for as long as they'll have me.
Well, I mean, as you know, I've done some extra work on Outlander. I've been on a few episodes, including a couple of episodes with yourself. And I have to say the crew were really nice to the extras as well. And that's not always the case. You know, sometimes they can get forgotten about, you know, in the cold and the rain. But mind you, we didn't have any hot water bottles or upper kilts or anything. But
No, I don't know. I don't know about the thought of a hot water bottle up my kilt. I don't know how I'd feel about it. I mean, I don't think I had any. I think I just had thermals for a little bit, you know.
And a plastic bag on your head when it was raining. And,
yeah, you did. That's when you saw me, yeah.
Oh, God.
Fun memories.
Now we have another caller on the line. We have Janet, who's in Portland in Oregon. And Janet has a question about your acting career. Janet, you're on the air live, and we're broadcasting worldwide with Andrew Gower.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, can you hear me? Janet.
Hi, hello.
Now, you have a question for Andrew.
I do, Andrew. I've got a great one, I think. Can you tell us about something that happened that went wrong during either being on stage or filming, and how you saved it or fixed it? Like, what happened, and were you able to rescue the scene or what you were doing?
Yeah. But there's one in Outlander that we have an amazing props team, and we were filming a scene around a map where they asked me to destroy a small model on top of the map. I think it was the British and we had the Scottish, and they kind of made these amazing kind of wax models. And the props guy said, Andrew, listen, it's totally fine for you to smash with your hand, like, totally fine, just do it like this. And I was like, yeah, that's great, I'll do that. And I was, you know, I had a weird thing of when I'm blocking a scene, I'm behaving like the character, so I'm probably not really listening as much as I should have done. And I'm just like, yeah, I'll smash it in some way. And then we get to the rehearsal, and lo and behold, the director, you know, says, can you just go for the smash in this so we can see what it's like? And I go for the smash, and instead of doing it how they exactly told me, which was with an open palm, I did it with a closed fist, and my hand, basically, the thing didn't smash, and I had like 6-7 like little bloody spots on my hand from smashing it. And it was rather amusing for everybody else, and slightly amusing looking back, but at the time it was a bit painful. But that was the thing that went wrong. So always listen. I always, you know, should be listening to props guys when they're talking you through a prop, and don't pretend that you know what you're doing. Yeah, and always hit it with an open fist. Hit everything with an open fist. Never a closed fist. So yeah, so that happened on the set. That happened on the outland set.
The dangers of being an actor. Does that answer your question, Janet?
Oh, yeah.
Thanks so much for your time today. What's going on in Oregon today and in Portland? What are you doing today?
I'm just finishing up teaching. We've got one more week of classes with the students, and then they're out for summer.
Oh.
And I'm off to Scotland and Ireland about 3 weeks after that, for about 3 weeks.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, I'll probably...
You have to pop and see Ross.
Yeah, I'll probably see you in one of the pubs.
You'll have to tell me the best ones to go to.
Oh, you're talking to the right guy.
There's so many.
Yeah, we know...
I'm in Glasgow about 3 times.
Oh, nice one.
During the summer. Yeah.
Yeah, well, give me a shout when you're here.
I will, yeah.
All right, Janet, thanks very much for calling in today.
Oh, thank you, Andrew.
Janet. Bye-bye.
Have a great time. Bye.
Thank you so
much.
Thanks,
Janet.
Bye-bye. Have a great one.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Janet Canning there, calling from Portland in Oregon. Thanks to Janet for calling in there. And it's always nice to hear from the fans. It shows that they're paying attention. Now,
I'm going to go out on a limb and say Janet's pretty happy. She seems like she's a very upbeat person.
Yes, that's the way we like them.
Absolutely.
We could all learn from Janet, definitely.
Absolutely.
Now, I want to just before we move on to the next topic, I want to go back in time a little bit, Andrew, and ask you about Monroe, because this is very interesting. Yes. Nightmare, wait to hear this. TV series, ITV series, Monroe. Andrew played Dr. Andrew Mullery, who was a general surgeon in training. And to research the role, Andrew had to watch 2 real, actual coronary bypass surgeries. But yes. Tell us about that, Andrew. How did that happen?
Yeah, that was my very... I just graduated from drama school, and that was my first job out of drama school. And and as part of research, originally I was part of the cardiac team, and then in the second series, I move over to general surgery. And so in the first series, we were lucky enough to go into an operation, into theatre, with an amazing surgeon called Graham Venn. I asked him, as part of my research, to treat me like one of his trainees. So in true fashion, he made me wear pink clogs. He made me wear pink clogs, you know, what surgeon, you know, like croc shoes. Yeah, the crocs. He made me wear pink ones of them. And he made me shave with a blunt razor. And then 5 minutes later, I was over a bypass operation.
and I watched the anaesthetist, you know, hand control over to a machine and medicate the person. You know, it was just absolute breathtaking, but also, I mean, to begin with, it was uncomfortable. It was very uncomfortable. Weirdly, just one of the most incredible things I've ever, still to this day, you know, I never thought, as a, you know, as a 16, 17 year old who aspired to be an actor, my first job out of drama school, I'd be watching somebody have open heart surgery. I just didn't think that would ever happen. So, yeah, even my dad, who's a paramedic for 32 years, he's never actually been in the operation that I was in. So there was a lot of jealousy. But an amazing, amazing experience. And yeah, something that, yeah, I'll never forget.
Yeah, it's not something that not everybody is going to have that opportunity. So that's quite amazing. That's incredible.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. Yeah.
Now, recently you've been working again with Stephen Walters. Now, I want you to tell us a little bit about Humpty Dumpty and what it's about. And I know that there's only so much, it's very limited what you can tell us about the plot.
Yeah, it is. Unfortunately, it is. I mean, this is the thing. With a lot of things that, you know, like the projects I've just filmed or whatever, and this particular project just now with myself and Stephen, is with it comes, unfortunately, enigmas and, you know, and not being able to say so much. But it is, it's something that's been brewing, a passion project that's been brewing between myself and Stephen for a good 2.5 years, even longer now. It is involving the Merseybeat music scene, the world famous revolution of music that happened in Liverpool, and it was the stable, the Brian Epstein stable of obviously the Beatles, Cilla Black, Billy J. Kramer, Jerry and the Pacemakers, and this particular documentary is going to focus on the story, the life and career of what happened to Tommy Quickley and why his career took a very different path to the others I've just mentioned. And within that documentary, there's going to be an amazing new angle and way of looking at this scene that I think, and myself and Stephen think, that, you know, there was 8 days a week recently, a documentary about the Beatles, there was a biopic on Cilla Black, you know, Jerry and the Pacemakers, everybody that played every week, You'll Never Walk Alone, has played every week in Anfield. And yeah, they all are involved in especially Liverpool folklore, but also internationally. And, you know, Billy J. Kramer lives in New York. He's successful, but Tommy, for some reason, doesn't have that. And myself and Stephen, as big fans of his, are setting out to answer a lot of questions, and are excited to share the story with you because we think it's going to be a refreshing take on it.
Well, it sounds absolutely incredible, and in fact, we do have another caller on the line from Germany this time. Isabel's from Germany, and she has a question about the project. Isabel, are you with us?
Okay. Yes, I am. Hello.
Thank you for calling in.
Hey, Isabel.
You're on the air with Andrew. Fire away with your question.
Okay, so my question is about Tommy, and obviously I don't know that much about him, but I know that he was very young. I think he was 15 when he started his music career, and I know that you were about the same age when you started your own band. So I was wondering if you maybe see some kind of parallels or a connection between yourself and Tommy, and if that's maybe the reason why you're so fascinated by him.
Yeah, that's an amazing question.
Thank you.
The answer to that is yes, I do. I do. I do see parallels between, but also, I don't know whether this is a really sad quality to have, but I think what could have been and failure and missed opportunity. I don't know whether it's something to do with. That's what fascinates. I'm not as interested in success as I am sometimes failure and why things didn't work out. And ultimately, I think, you know, the career I'm in is such a ruthless career as an actor. Never mind, you know, as a musician, I didn't really, you know, I loved I loved and I still do love my music, and I will never stop. We'll never stop, you know, doing it as a passion. But especially for my acting career as well, I think seeing somebody who started, as you said, so young, and somebody who rubs shoulders with some of the most legendary musicians that we'll ever talk about, I think it's such a that kind of being a young artist. I wasn't 15, I was 17 and a half, 18 when I was in drama school, and I myself was not ready to move to London, but Tommy himself toured the world as a 15, 16, 17 year old, and he was living the dream. So that's what fascinates me. It does fascinate me as a younger artist, and to do with the music, because I think everybody who is a musician, I guess if you'd speak to the Gallagher brothers from Oasis, if you used to speak to Blur, if you used to speak to Mumford and Sons, whoever, they would all turn around and say to you, God, wouldn't it have been amazing to be around in the 60s with Carnaby Street and the Cavern and what was going on over in New York, and the likes of Jimi Hendrix and Jim Morrison coming over here in the 70s, you would have, I think a lot of people would have given their left hand to have been involved in that, and Tommy was. So therefore, I am fascinated to see this story through somebody else's eyes, and somebody that age definitely fascinates me.
Okay, thank you. That's a great
thank
question.
You,
I'm really looking forward.
Really good. Yeah, I'm looking forward to sharing it with you guys.
Thank you very much, Isabel. Thank you very much, Isabel, for calling in. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
And what's happening? What are you doing today in Germany?
Enjoying the sunshine.
Oh, I wish I hadn't asked.
It's really sunny and warm.
I wish I had never asked. I live in Scotland where, the rain's a lot warmer today. But not much sunshine.
So that's summer for you, isn't it?
Yes, that's our summer. Yeah.
You've got the acid rain today, Ross. The acid rain, the warm rain.
Yeah, it's much warmer today. But Isabel, thanks for taking the time to call in. We really appreciate your question.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Isabel.
Yes, bye,
Isabel.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
You know, it's funny because every time we talk about Liverpool or Stephen Walters, you start to sound like John Lennon when you're speaking. Have you noticed that nightmare? His Liverpudlian accent starts to become a bit more stronger when he's talking about Liverpool.
You should hear me after a pint of Guinness.
Now, we were talking there about your music career. You started with the band Emerson. they don't exist anymore, is that correct?
No, the people do. The people are still around, but we don't perform together anymore now, which is, it's quite one of those things where you're young and you're gigging, and it's just they've all had kids and I haven't had kids and we're not around, but they're still based up north and I still drink with them every now and then. But I do, as far as music goes, it's kind of a kind of side passion project that everything's a passion project, isn't it? But no, on the side of my acting is I do some stuff with a Norwegian mate of mine, and we gig every now and then, but it's very sporadic, and it's a selfish thing, sometimes my music, because it's just a thing that I could never stop doing, really. I could never stop doing, regardless of people wanting people to listen to it. It's always just my thing.
And I know that there's, if people want to listen to some of the stuff you did with Emerson, there's a couple of clips on YouTube, people can look them up.
Oh yeah.
You should do that. Just to get back to Humpty Dumpty, how can people help with the project?
First of all, just to say to everybody who has tweeted and retweeted and done everything, the support we've had has been phenomenal, and I'm speaking on behalf of myself and Stephen, that we're in a position now, I don't know how many days are left, I think it's 23.
For the Kickstarter campaign?
For the Kickstarter campaign, the amount we have raised so far has just been, totally unexpected. But it shouldn't be a surprise because the fans of Outlander and everybody else who supported have just been sensational. And yeah, I've stressed on the Kickstarter campaign, and both myself and Stephen have stressed on our Twitters that it is a micro budget. What we're shooting a full feature documentary about Tommy, and it's every little helps. Pardon the pun that Tesco used, but it really does, in the sense that we want to take this to festivals. We want to, you know, if we can have longer in the edit than we thought at the beginning, then this, you know, if we can interview one more person and have money to interview one more person, or if we can use, you know, that little better standard of equipment, every little penny that you guys give us and support and sharing and just, yeah, is still, you know, with the amount of time we have left, it's, yeah, it'd be amazing to just continue your support. But also a big thank you for all your help so far.
Okay, no worries. And of course, fans can follow you on Twitter at @TheAndrewGower. Yeah. And
and at Stephen Walters.
At Stephen Walters and Humpty, is it Humpty Film?
Yeah, at Humpty Film is the Twitter. And to let you guys, there's a website under construction at the moment. When we get the, which will be with you by the, you know, by the end of the Kickstarter. And yeah, we'll be constantly keeping you guys updated because already in the past 2 weeks since it's been happening, we've got exciting news to share with you. It's just when we can say it and when we will say it. It's a matter of time, basically.
Right. Now, something else I want to mention. What's the Gustafsson's?
Oh, that's me and my Norwegian mate. That's the thing that I do on the side, which my Norwegian mate encouraged me, because I was never going to share that music ever with anybody, but I had a drink with my Norwegian friend, and he encouraged me to put it out there and just see what people think of it. And we're going to be continuing writing music forever. I will always write music with that chap, but it's with no purpose or aim. It's just because we enjoy doing it. And yeah, and the reaction's been, again, the reaction to that's been really, really, really nice. And again, there's so much music we have together. His name's Webbo. We have so much music together. But yeah, it's when I find time to record it, because at the moment I don't have much time to record. So yeah, most of my recording happening with Mr. Stephen Walters at the moment. He's taking up all my time. So
yeah.
Sorry, Webbo. Yeah.
Well, you must get some. If you guys do any more recordings, you must send us over something, and we'll play them on air. I'm sure the fans would love that.
Definitely.
Now, as well as acting and playing music, you also like to kick a football around now and again. So tell us a wee bit about tell us about FC Beaujolais.
The FC Beaujolais. We consider ourselves to be the most progressive football team in London, but that's a kind of self-titled team. And it's apart from myself and a very good friend of mine, Luke, we are the only two actors in the team. And it's really refreshing for me, because as a 17-year-old, as I went to drama school and I was a it was only a right thought for me going to drama school. I was a delusional footballer who thought he was good enough to make it professional, and was not good enough. Even at the age of 17, I thought that. And then somehow I ended up at drama school and just stopped playing football. So then only about 2 years ago, I joined this team, and it's kind of given me that passion to play football and play, I play centre midfield for the team, and they let me play there. And it's been a lovely, lovely group of architects and a writer for the Sunday Times, Jamie Oliver manager. It's just a great physio, great group of lads who all kind of really, it's funny because you kind of reach an age where you think that men kind of don't take it very seriously, but we all take it seriously but with a smile on our faces as well. And if anybody ever wants to come and watch us, we play down at Regent's Park, so come and watch. It's fun, it's a fun thing, and we start that's why we call ourselves the Beaujolais Fun Boys. And we play, I can't believe I'm talking about this, Ross. And we play, Saturdays, and we start our new season in September. But lo and behold, I probably won't be around, which is a shame. But that's the nature of my job. But it's a great thing to come back to when I'm free.
Fantastic! I love that name, FC Bosley. kind of name we would come up with here. But listen, there's one more question, the ultimate question, Andrew, that everyone wants to know. Will Bonnie Prince Charlie be back? Will he be in season 3? Can you tell us?
A nice way of saying it is, if I'm not in the episode, I will be just as disappointed as the fans. It's centred around Culloden. I seem to remember doing something.
Right.
I can't give you guys a yes or a no, but as much as I'd love to. I know Diana's been asked several times as well, is Andrew in it? And I just say watch it, and if I'm not in it, I'll be as disappointed as you guys. So there we go.
There we go, the very diplomatic answer, Andrew, but thank you very much for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you about Outlander and about Humpty Dumpty.
Yeah, I know, thanks, and thanks for your support, mate, with everything to do with the film, and thanks for having me on, guys. It's nice.
Andrew, if you ever make it to the States, especially here in Middle Earth, swing by KC and we'll hook you up with some barbecue and beer.
Hey, that sounds like my dream. Fantastic. If I'm ever there, I'll look you up, Mike.
Oh, fantastic. We got a spare room at the studio. It'll be perfect.
Cheers, man. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks a lot, mate. You take care and come back and see us. Come back and see us once everything's up and running and give us an update.
Yeah, we'll be sharing, definitely. Cheers, Ross. Thanks so much. Have a lovely evening, guys.
Cheers, Andrew. Have a great night. Have a great weekend.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. Andrew Gower on the show there, fantastic guy. Bonnie Prince Charlie in Outlander, and lots of other stuff as well. Sherlock Holmes, what a nice guy.
Yeah, he's a groovy cat, man. I love listening to his stories. He's got a very well-spoken air about him that if he ever got into politics, you'd believe the bullshit he was saying.